All right, so it's March, well, at least the time that we released this episode, and a lot of you may have made New Year's resolutions. And if the statistics are right, there's a strong chance you might have fallen off or given up on those New Year's resolutions. Others, you may not have even set any New Year's resolutions. I know some people who don't even believe in setting New Year's resolutions because they believe, like, hey, what's the point? You know, most people give up on them anyways. I remember hearing nearly 8 years ago, though, some statistic that around 80% of people give up their New Year's resolutions or commitments by February, and 90% or even more have given up by the end of the year. And instead of getting kind of discouraged by that or unmotivated, I said to myself, you know what? I'm going to be one of the 3%. And honestly, since then, I have really continued to be more and more intentional about building good habits and disciplines in my life and breaking the bad habits. More so, I've been intentional and really trying to work to create the life that I desire for myself and for the people around me, and to become the person that I want to become. And for me, that's what personal development is all about. And that's what we're going to talk about on this lengthy episode today. So welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host Nate Sanderson. I apologize for the length of today's episode. We always try to keep them under 30 minutes, but I got a little carried away because this stuff is really, really important. You know, we can't build a better culture if we don't become a better leader, and we cannot become a better leader if we don't become a better person. Now, if you want to get the notes to this episode and every episode of the podcast, head on over to tocculture.com and subscribe to our newsletter there. Also there, you can learn more about how we help leaders improve their culture and their leadership and help them on this personal development journey. Now, let's get right into Nate and I's conversation around personal development.
JP, this week on the podcast, we're going to dive into a conversation here on a topic that has been close to your heart for a while. You know, you and I kind of have a working list of things to talk about here on the podcast. And the topic of personal development has been something that you've wanted to share about here for a while. And we were kind of joking off air before we started recording here that you're a little bit of a unicorn, I think, when it comes to the way that you study personal development and implement some of those disciplines into your life. In that, when you read something that you think would be beneficial to you, I think a lot of us highlight it in a book. We might write some notes in a journal somewhere, but you are maybe the most dedicated person I know to actually taking action when you find something that you think could benefit you in your own personal growth and development. And I think that's what we kind of want to explore a little bit this week, is your journey in developing yourself as a coach, as a parent, as a husband, and how we might be able to benefit from some of the things that you've learned.
Yeah, so there's kind of two big reasons that I've been kind of motivated to have this topic for the podcast discussion here. And the first is kind of what you alluded to there, is that I've been on this journey and I've been really committed to my own personal growth and development, though it's been a very, very slow process. I want to just make that very clear. So slow, in fact, that I'd say most days you don't actually feel like you're growing or developing. But when I look back, really, in the last 8 years of my life, in particular, as I've been really focused on this since I actually got married about 8 years ago, and my wife and I were actually reflecting on it this weekend about how we both have changed since we got married. When I look back on it, it is, you know, really profound, and I am actually proud of the growth that I've experienced. So I'm eager to share some of the things that I feel have helped me, because I think, and I know that they can help other people out there. And the other big reason is because I think we're kind of coming to the end of, you know, basketball and ice hockey season, which is a large amount of the coaches that we support, Nate. And I think there's something we don't talk a lot about, which is this area of personal development and disciplines and how we actually grow our character. You know, we do talk about the mission, the philosophy, the vision of transformational leadership. And then I think we jump to this other part where it's how you actually build that out within your team, how you develop that culture and build those relationships. But there's a missing piece there, and that is the person, our own personal disciplines, our character, you know, and how we grow that. Because if we really want to be able to actualize, to live out our mission, we have to be growing as leaders. We have to be growing as people. We say it all the time. To become better coaches, you got to become better people. And I see coaches, especially at this time of year in basketball and ice hockey, you know, the personal disciplines, the maybe the exercise and the sleep that we had in the off season, those things, the deficiencies in those areas, they start to add up. And as they add up, we start to get further and further away from the coach that we want to be with our team. And we start to, you know, sometimes, you know, move off mission. So for those two reasons alone, I think this is a really important conversation for us to have.
Well, you've already mentioned some of the areas that you've really prioritized when it comes to your own growth. And you made a list for me here as we were getting ready for the podcast, a couple things on there, just some healthy habits, right? With sleep and nutrition and exercise. You've looked at your time management. You've talked about wanting to read and have a system for taking notes, for being in solitude and being in nature, for having a learning system, for journaling, and then just having mentoring and coaching relationships in your own life. And I know you're at various stages with some of those different areas, but I'm curious, you know, as you've gone through a little bit of that reflective process here over the last even few days, as you mentioned with your wife, what are some of the most significant differences that you see now in maybe JP 2.0 today compared to where you were before you started this process of trying to ingrain some of these habits more intentionally into your life, you know, 8 years ago when you started?
Well, I think the big thing that jumps out at me about what you said there, Nate, was just this, in the word intentional, is that I think that I tried to be an intentional in everything that I do, you know, and that's taken a lot of time to, you know, raise my level of intentionality. But if I look at JP 8 years ago, I would say he just kind of went through life. You know, I was passionate about coaching. I was committed to my coaching. I worked hard, but you just kind of wake up and you just kind of do. You're running on autopilot and you hop from one thing to the next. And oftentimes in the course of a coach's life in a season, things just kind of happen. You just, you know, you're very reactionary. And now I've built in the time for me to really step back, to really reflect, and to be intentional about how I shape my life, my day, so that it's closer towards the life that I want to live. And I'm doing more of the things that are going to be good for me and less of the things that I think detract from my quality of life and the relationships of the people I care the most about. And so that level of intentionality is so, so important. So yeah, you listed out, you know, all those different disciplines, and those are all things that every coach would aspire to: sleep more, to eat more, to exercise more, to be better at our time management, and, you know, spend more time in nature or reflection. But we really have to find, you know, a way to build a system into our life so that we can continuously reflect and make kind of revisions in our life so that we can build those things in.
Ask you one more question before we dive into some of the practical things that you've done here. But when you look back, you know, you mentioned before your progress has been incremental, that there are days where you have these disciplines, you get a lot of sleep, and you don't necessarily feel like a superhuman being by the end of the week. But over the course of time, as those disciplines have paid off in interest, you know, and compounded over the years, how do you see yourself differently again today than maybe when you started out 8 years ago as a husband, when you first got married, or interacting with your kids after you spent some time really trying to learn how to be a better father in some ways? I mean, what benefit has there been to this process for you as you look at it today?
Nate, this might sound a little bit strange to come across, or maybe it's arrogant, but I really truly believe that I'm operating on a whole different level. And as a husband, as a father, as a friend, you know, as a human being. And this, and what I mean by that is that I am more of the father that I would want to be. I'm more of the husband that I want to be. I'm more of the leader and the friend and family member that I would want to be. Do I have areas for growth? Absolutely. Everybody in my family would assure you that. My kids would tell you that. And they would, you know, because I'm open with my children about my areas for growth and what I'm trying to work on. And they're only 6 years old, 4 years old, and 1 year old. And the 1 year old doesn't listen much yet, but the other two do, you know, especially when it's dad talking about what he's trying to get better at, because they're quick to agree. But for me, it's I'm so much more present with my children. And I look at this, and you know, Elena is six, and I remember her coming into the world. And then I remember Kieran at four. And I remember that first year. And I remember now I look back, and Connell, you know, my third child, is 1 year old. And this is a great, I think, way to explain it, is for Connell's first year of his life, I have enjoyed the experience of his first 12 months more than I enjoyed the first two ones, because I'm more grateful. I'm more locked in. I'm not on my phone as much as I used to be. It's put away at 5 o'clock at night. It doesn't come back out usually until the kids are asleep. I have more balance. I'm sleeping better. I'm just able to be more present. And because of that, I feel like I've been more engaged with him. And I know it sounds crazy, and maybe it's just, you know, birth order or whatever it is, but my wife has even seen it as like, you have such a connection with him at this age that you hadn't had with the other kids, because I was this coach that was, you know, running around, and, you know, I was just constantly not present, not in the moment, and not able to be there for those people in my life. And the thing is too, it's not just about, you know, those people for family, but the people that I'm fortunate to work with, the mentor, to lead, wherever I am, whoever I'm with, I'm able to be more present in that moment, to be more empathetic, to be more curious, because of these things.
Well, JP, as I hear you kind of describe the benefits, you know, I think all of us are probably thinking along the same lines that I am, of like, well, that sounds pretty good. You know, I'm sure my wife would come on board with wanting to see a better version of Nate Sanderson every night when she comes home, you know, from work, and somebody that is better with our kids. And certainly my players would like to see a better version of me as well. So you've been doing this now, you know, again, as you said, intentionally for the last 7 or 8 years. And if we were just going to boil it down and say, all right, JP, what are the three biggest things that have had the most impact on your ability to start introducing some of these disciplines into your life? What is it? What are the big three that we should be aware of?
Yeah, and I actually have started calling it like the big three when I'm working with coaches and other leaders, because if we can get these, if I really believe if you can get these three things down, you can really build any sort of habit or discipline into your life if you could just nail these three. And I'm going to give them to you in the order that I implemented them in my life, but it's actually kind of the reverse order of importance, personally, I actually believe. The first thing I started to build before actually even these big three came into place is I started the habit of reading. You know, I've told the story before on the podcast, but just to recap, you know, I took up the Burn Your Goals reading challenge. That was 52 books in 2 years by Joshua Metcalf and Jamie Gilbert. And I read 52 books in 1 year. You know, I was like super committed. I was going to do it. And I gave away my TV for 3 months. And, you know, like I had nothing to do. I would sit there and eat dinner. My wife and kids were, you know, living in Pennsylvania. So for 3 months I was living apart from them. So I'd sit there and just read books or listen to books by myself while I ate dinner. But reading isn't actually one of my big three. It was when I read the book, James Clear's book, Atomic Habits, that I came across this idea of habit tracking, which is you pick up disciplines or habits and you kind of essentially track them with a little check mark when you do them, when you don't. And so that became, I bought the Clear Habits Journal, which you can get on Amazon and I think baronfig.com. And I've got, I think, almost six of them at this stage now, you know, from over the years. And for me, it's not you know, if I don't do it with all, because I think I track about 15 different habits now and disciplines, it's not like, oh, I failed because I didn't do it. It's just a reflection. It's kind of like I wouldn't even say a scorecard, but it's just reflecting and saying, hey, how did I do today? Did I invest in myself? Did I do the things that I know that I need to do to live a good life, to be at my best? You know, and that's what it is. It's just a simple reflection, reminders every day. Okay, I didn't do it today. Can I try to get that in tomorrow? Can I try to get that exercise in? Can I try to get that 8 hours of sleep that I needed to get in? And so it's just these constant reminders. So being consistent in coming to that journal every morning or every evening. For me now, it's, you know, 2 minutes in the morning and it's 2 minutes in the evening, if even that in the evening, just to check in on that is huge. And really, you can do it in 2 minutes a day. So that was kind of like the first thing I put in place. The other thing is to block schedule your day. I remember hearing Tim Ferriss talk about how, you know, Tim, I don't know if you don't know Tim Ferriss, but he interviews all these gurus and experts and people, and he's got a couple books out there, Tribe of Mentors and a, you know, YouTube channel. But I remember him talking about how the single habit that he's seen successful people do the most is to block schedule their day. They plan out their day. They say, what do I want my day to look like today? And I totally understand that, you know, for a lot of people, there's not a lot of flexibility. There's not a lot of wiggle room. You got to get the kids to school here. You got to have classes here. You got practice at this time. And I get that. But if there is 2 hours of your day that you have flexibility or 4 hours or whatever it is, you know, it's taking that time and it's trying to schedule in the things that are important the day before. Because once you get into the hurry of your day and things are moving, you know, it's easy to pick the thing that, you know, is easy to do, right? It's just, you'll fall into that habit of, you know, end up taking, you know, hopping on social media and scrolling through your phone. You'll, you know, which so many of us do the first thing in the morning. You'll hit the snooze button when you to get those extra few minutes of sleep that actually, you know, the research so isn't good sleep, is snooze sleep. There's just so many distractions that you'll fall into. So actually sitting down and saying, hey, what do I want my day to look like tomorrow? And just kind of block scheduling. For some people, that's, you know, for me, it was almost every 15 minutes, every 30 minutes, depending on the activity. For some people, it's every hour, what that hour will look like. But just having some intentionality is huge. And the third thing, which I truly believe is actually, like for me, it's the number one thing. And this is going to sound crazy, but it's to go out and buy an old school alarm clock, put that next to your bed and take your phone and put it downstairs or, you know, put it in the other room. And I set my alarm at 4:50 a.m. every morning, and then next to my bed. And then at 5 a.m. is my phone alarm, which will go off and wake the whole entire house if I don't get to it. And this is huge for me because my biggest issue with these disciplines is lack of time, as most of us will say, you know, is, oh, I don't have time for mindfulness, or I don't have time to journal. I don't have time to go for a walk in nature, or I don't have time to get that at workout in, whatever it is. But so often we're hitting the snooze button, you know, and it's just like, I don't hit it. And I'm instantly, the first decision of my day is, here's this moment. I can either get out of bed and do the thing I need to go get done, or I can stay in bed. And all of a sudden I start to lose that time throughout the day to do important things. So for me, it's that alarm clock. It's the way I start my day. I'm ready to go. And then I instantly can go downstairs and get into my journaling routine. And those are really, for me, the big three is that journaling, you know, habit tracking, block scheduling out my day, which I often do the night before or the morning of, but I can't recommend enough getting the old school alarm clock back.
Well, JP, your suggestion of using the second alarm, it makes me chuckle because I think of our own household. It's kind of like putting a time bomb in the middle of the bedrooms upstairs at our house, that if you don't disarm it, everybody's going to wake up at 5:45 and nobody's going to be happy. And that's, you know, that is an interesting motivator to get yourself out of bed, which I think is pretty creative there. So what we're going to do next year is, we mentioned a few of these categories that you've really spent a lot of time trying to improve, and we're going to not necessarily hit on all of them, but I am curious, you know, almost like a quick hitter set here of what the best kind of practical advice you would give for some of these categories here. And we're going to start with just overall health, right? That might be sleep, it might be nutrition, it might be exercise. I think all of those things come in jeopardy, certainly during the season. I know from my own experience in the fall and the spring when I'm not coaching, I'm much better about getting 7 or 8 hours of sleep, making sure that I'm exercising almost every day and eating a little better than I do during the season. But in order to be consistent year round, you know, what are some things that have worked for you when it comes to some of those healthy habits?
Yeah, I mean, obviously everyone has different thoughts on nutrition, and I've tried every, you know, diet plan out there, and everyone's got to figure out something that works for them, that's practical. And I think it's the same with exercise. You know, I've done every different type of workout since I left competitive sports out there. And now what's best for me and my lifestyle is just to go running because it's simple, it's quick, it's easy to do. I'm out the door and I can be in a park in less than, you know, 5 minutes really. So I just really kind of naturally gravitated to that because there wasn't a lot of friction for me to go running as part of my exercise, especially during the lockdown. But I'd say the one big health habit that I would really want to encourage coaches on, and we've talked about before, is sleep. And I've noticed that of all the disciplines that I've done, I would say, you know, as far as just like healthy habits, mindfulness has, you know, once I started committing to like 20 minutes of that, that was pretty significant. But when I moved from 7 hours to 8 hours of sleep, I know some people are like, 8 hours, how do you get 8 hours of sleep? Well, one thing is I don't watch a lot of TV, I'll tell you that. But like, there was a significant, like observable improvement in my mental and emotional state when I really made that commitment to start to be more consistent. I'm typically between that 7 and 8. I will say I still struggle to get the 8, but I'm always almost getting that 7. And that's challenging. It's tough to do that. It takes a lot of discipline, takes giving up certain things, but there, like I said, significant improvement in my mental and emotional state. And the research would show that really, we may think that it doesn't hurt our performance as coaches or as people, but it does. It hurts all of us if we don't get that amount of sleep that we need.
Well, I appreciate you sharing all of those things there, JP, because I do think, you know, that's kind of the holy trinity of health, right? Is just making sure that we get adequate sleep, that our nutrition is decent, and that we're exercising, you know. And I think the thing for me, again, I'm not good at most of these things, but exercise is one that I've been a lot better at here the last year and a half or so. And two things that have helped me with that. Number one is lowering the bar a little bit, you know, instead of like, I got to run 20 miles this week, or I've got to get, you know, this much time. I think a lot of the research when it comes to just longevity and health says movement matters. And that means that maybe 15 minutes of yoga and a 10-minute walk at night is better than nothing. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to get at peak heart rate for a certain amount of time unless you're training, you know, for something specific. But I think just valuing movement and watching steps a little bit, and, you know, maybe not having to get to 10,000. I just read a study the other day that said 7,000 steps seems to be the magic number, you know. And so valuing that, and for me, I'm old, JP, right? So I'm turned 44 last fall, and my calves have given out when I run. Like, it's a disaster when I try to run very far, very fast. But one of my friends got me on a bicycle. And so got a gravel bike. And that's been the thing for me, is just getting out, because I can do that multiple days in a row and it doesn't trash my legs, you know, like running used to do. And then we got a trainer indoors. So in the wintertime, I can just spin while I'm watching film or watching, you know, just decompressing or what have you. And that has been a huge game changer for me, is just making, as you said, reducing the friction that makes it hard to exercise or hard to move. And so whatever that looks like, you know, even if it's taking extra laps during your prep period, or it's walking to school instead of driving sometimes, or whatever it might be, but any way that we can add movement, I think there's benefit to it, big ways and small ways. I want to come back just for a quick second here. You talked about the benefit of sleep, and you talked about, you know, the time bomb and getting up at the same time every morning. What does your evening routine look like then? Do you have a consistent bedtime where, you know, you're sort of honoring that every night so that you have a chance to get 8 hours? Or what does your go to bed routine look like?
Well, I think the key here is it's not always the same time, but it's close. It's within this range. And there's two things that I do to keep it fairly consistent, you know, in that 9 o'clock, 9:30, you know, ish time frame. And that is the block scheduling, like I mentioned. I actually don't just block schedule my day. I block schedule my week. I, you know, have a list for a month. I have a list for every quarter, for every year. I got this whole unique system. But what it does is when I have a kind of a list for the week and I have an idea of how I'm going to get things done throughout the week, it takes pressure off me, because I'm not staring at this big list of all the things I got to do this week. It's just for this day. And so I'm able, when 8 o'clock, you know, comes and maybe I have to do a little bit of work before I go to bed, I can go hop the computer and yeah, I'll spend maybe, you know, 15, 30 minutes. But usually I've got time tomorrow. I know I'll get it done eventually, you know, and there isn't that pressure. So that's the power of the block scheduling. And then the other thing I do to help stay consistent is I've just cut out non-value added activities in my life. Scrolling through my phone, right? There's a key of putting your phone downstairs is, you know, or in another room is you don't waste time on your phone before you go to bed. There's no TV in our room. And I've really cut out a lot of like those things like TV, because I know a lot of people say like they need it to wind down, but I've just learned in my own experience. And also I've read the research that it actually doesn't help us wind down that all that much, you know, having that screen time is a physical book is so much more helpful. So I've just kind of cut out some non-value added activities. And then I've just brought a little bit more structure so that I can really try to hit that, you know, 9 o'clock is the ideal, you know, time for me to get to bed, you know.
I've heard you, JP, talk a lot about block scheduling before. And I think even on those days when, you know, I'm busiest with calls or I'm subbing at school or I've got stuff going on for basketball, it just is a reminder for me that the 90 minutes that I get when I come home or the hour that I have before the kids get out of school, you know, what do I want out of that time? And I think for me, it's so easy, and probably a lot of our listeners can relate to just sit down and relax, and you hold your phone for, you know, like you said, you just kind of scroll through to check in on the day. And the next thing you know, I'm late to go get my kids, and I've lost that time and then haven't benefited from that in any way. So I think that's a great reminder for all of us. Now, another thing that you mentioned here that I've heard our friend Mano Watsa talk about at clinics as well is the value of being in nature. And Mano talks about part of his morning routine is getting outside and walking on the earth in bare feet and just the benefit of connecting with nature in some way. And I wonder if you could, you know, you talk about that a little bit with the idea of solitude, and Will Ray's been on the podcast and talked about the importance of that as well. But what first of all, how do you do that? Getting into nature, making that a priority. And why has that been important for you?
You know, Nate, obviously I read a lot, and I've just come across so much research out there on the benefits of being out in nature, you know, for our mental and emotional health, that at some point I just like couldn't ignore the data. And then also my own experience where, you know, I run a lot, and now I'm very fortunate, you know, and I know that's not possible for everyone based upon where they live, but, you know, I can be in a really, really beautiful park here in Ireland in 5 minutes. And I'm a 30-minute drive from what's called the Wicklow Mountains, which are some of the most beautiful mountains you might get in Europe. You know, they're just these rolling green hills. And just to go out there and be there and not even have my headphones in, but just to be out there, I felt the benefit. And I know even with my family, I've seen the benefit in my kids. When we moved towns here in Ireland, we started to send them to a daycare, which I'd say has got about 3 to 4 acres. And, you know, rain, snow, or shine, the kids throw on boots and jackets. And it's, I guess, a very European thing. They're out there playing in nature. There's no screens in the school. And they're there digging and, you know, they're playing, you know, soccer and football. They're also, you know, finding bugs. And I mean, just the things they come home with. And they're always covered in dirt. But I have seen a significant improvement in my kids' behavior and emotional, like, health when we change schools. It was just drastic. They don't even come home and want to watch TV now, right? Whereas before they wanted more screen time. Now they don't even want screen time. And I've seen an impact there. So just trying to find any bit of nature. I've even read research out there that even putting fake plants in your office helps you to feel like you're connecting more with nature and has an impact. So there's research that says, even if you live in a big city, go buy a few fake plants, you know?
No, from my experience, when I started biking outside, you know, even if it's just on the roads or whatever, just it's so much better than being inside, obviously. And in Iowa, you know, there's just time of the year you can't bike outside. I think there's another thing that you mentioned there that is interesting because, again, I'm an old man, right? So when I was a kid, like when we ran and played outside and rode bikes and did stuff like that, we didn't have headphones and earbuds. And so to this day, when I'm riding and running and walking and taking our dogs out or whatever it might be, I never listen to anything. And for me, it's a place where I think my mind in a lot of ways unwinds. You know, you're kind of working some of the cortisol out of your system as you're exercising. But it's really allowed me to, I think, be in some of my most creative states are often when I am moving and not engaged in listening to any sort of media. And I know that's probably a little countercultural, but I mean, I remember going to weight rooms at school and stuff like that. And if I'm the only one there, I'm turning all the TVs off. I'm muting the music and just being quiet. My mind's not necessarily quiet, but I think there's a lot of benefit to that is hidden a little bit because A lot of times we just move and we want to be distracted, when the reality is your brain wants to really function during that time. And I think there's benefit to that too.
Yeah. And the research would absolutely show that, you know, during something like exercise, if we're able to disconnect, you know, and maybe not listen to some book or the latest coaching culture podcast episode, but just, you know, go exercise, spend time in nature, go for walks. And sometimes it's even, hey, you got something you need to give some real thought to. Maybe it's an issue with your team. Maybe it's a challenge in a relationship of yours, but just really go be out there and you might come up with some creative solutions for that, you know?
One interesting change that I made to my routine this year, JP, during the season, is that in the past, I've been a bit of a Mountain Dew and M&M addict during the basketball season. There's just something about sitting in front of the screen and watching film, and I'm just reaching for the peanut butter M&Ms, and I've got the Mountain Dew in the other hand, and I don't do it a lot out of season, but in season, like, I don't know, just it's ingrained into my system for too long. Well, this year, particularly on game days, instead of loading up on caffeine before a game, I started just doing a really quick 10 or 15 like minute sprint on my, again, I'm riding a bike indoors, right? But just going as hard as I could for 10 minutes, then go take a shower and get dressed and go to the game. And the mental psychological benefit of that was much better, you know, than loading yourself up on caffeine and trying to stay sharp that way. I thought it just really energized my system. It cleared my mind, gave me better focus during, you know, during those games. And so that was an important routine. Again, it's only 10, 12 minutes. It's not a lot. But I think any kind of, you know, stimulation that way via exercise can have mental benefits that we, you know, again, we don't always acknowledge if we haven't really tried it before. And now another thing, JP, that's on your list here is the importance of having mentorship and coaching relationships. And obviously we're in the industry of trying to provide that service for others, but I don't think it is necessarily always a formal arrangement that can be beneficial for people. And I think back to Dr. Bruce Perry's book that he wrote with Oprah, What Happened to You? And in the book, Oprah talks about this relationship that she has with her friend Gail and how through the course of their lives together, they have consistent calls where they're sharing what's going on and they're able to express their frustrations and share their joys. And she talks in the book about how that's been more beneficial to her, or as beneficial as what many people get from a therapy relationship with a therapist. And so, you know, you, I think, are kind of along the same lines of having some consistent conversation with people in your life. And I wonder if you could unpack that idea of that coaching mentor, you know, consistent friendship where you have a place to be able to share mutually through kind of life's journey.
Yeah, Nate, I love that bit in What Happened to You that Oprah talks about Gail. I think the hard thing for me, and I don't know if this is as much of a male thing, or maybe it's just this newer generation thing. But for me, the hard part was putting myself out there in some really good relationships I had. And the best example of that is I've had a friend that I've grew up playing basketball with in South Carolina. So we've known each other since high school and we've stayed in contact. As you know, he lived in California and I lived in Ireland and I moved back to Tennessee and he moved to North Carolina, but we've stayed in contact. But their friendship really started to reach another level when we both started to put ourselves out there and to share with each other some aspirations, you know, areas that we were looking to grow in, areas that we were struggling. And the relationship, you know, was strong and existed there, but I don't think our conversation always had maybe necessarily the substance that it could have had. And so we started to put ourselves out there, but we also started to make it kind of a commitment, more of a formal commitment of, hey, let's check in every Friday or every other Friday. We weren't perfect about it. We aren't perfect about it still to this day, but we try to say, hey, we're going to, it's almost like this, you know, a verbal agreement. We're going to really try to check in once a week and we're going to check in on, and we're going to ask people, you know, you ask each other, how are you doing in those areas that you said you wanted to grow? And I think sometimes you may already have a relationship in your life. You know, some people are like, oh, where is that relationship? Who is that person? That person may be in your life. I think sometimes we just need to take steps to be vulnerable and to share and to open up and to kind of just ask for kind of a bit of a commitment to each other, to push each other, to challenge each other, to stretch each other.
JP, here's the other benefit, I think, to having that consistent relationship or conversation with somebody or a couple of people in your life. It's almost like if you imagine your life being written out in a book, you know, every time that I get on a call with my best friend, Dave Bowler, you know, or when my dad was alive, this was something that, you know, I talk to him every other week or every week or whatever it might be. And in a way I'm narrating my story, right? And I'm processing the things that have happened, both good and bad, but I'm doing it in a way that helps me to find a frame that allows me to move forward or to find gratitude or to appreciate even in the midst of a mess, you know, some of the things that may have gone well. And I think that when you're asked to tell your story, and obviously we can do it in ways where we're glossing over, you know, some of our weaknesses or our errors, or we don't get vulnerable. And I certainly reflect on that as well. But I think just having someone to listen forces you to process some of those things in a way that's different than somebody that's walking with you every day, you know, that doesn't have all the day-to-day details of what you do today, how this conversation go today, how is this at work today. It's a little bit more broad, right? I think about, you know, walking through my season with Coach Orvis this year as a mentor for me, and just how I learned to frame our games better because I'm telling the story, you know, to someone else, right? And so I think even that challenge can be beneficial for us when it's consistent. And sometimes that's, again, every week, every other week. Sometimes there's friends that I catch up with every other month. But it's the same kind of thing, right, that you're talking about there that can be beneficial for us to learn from each other's stories as well.
Yeah, and I just want to add one more thing to this, because I think there's a difference, you know, in some of these relationships we're talking about. You know, there's those friends, there's those people that know you, that you have that relationship with. But we've also mentioned, you know, a couple of weeks ago in the podcast, and I think you brought it up there a few minutes ago, of these coaches, people that would coach us. And, you know, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago how I, you know, hired Jamie Gilbert as a kind of a coach mentor to work with me on my leadership and culture development years ago. You know, just last year, you know, I was really struggling. My wife was struggling, you know, on our parenting, you know, and I wasn't really proud of who I was as a dad at that moment. I definitely wasn't the dad I wanted to be. And I said, if I can get one thing right in 2021, I'm going to get this parenting right. And so, you know, like usual, I just pick up books and I read and read about, you know, the positive discipline book. And then I just followed up and we hired a parent coach because we said, why try to do this all by ourselves, right? There's people that have expertise in this area of parenting. I'm going to seek them out, you know? And I think that is part of my personal development journey is I don't try to do this all alone. I know there's other people that are further ahead than me. And I want that coaching. I want their expertise to help guide me so I can not only avoid just making certain mistakes, but I can get where I want to go a little bit quicker, you know, and I have to put work in. There's no doubt about that. But I'm always fascinated by that. I mean, we just had Jason Gaddis in the podcast the last few episodes, and I'm already looking at getting into his, you know, relationship and coaching and conflict management, because I'm like, man, that's an area that I could grow in. And these guys are further ahead than me and they have something to teach me. So I'm always looking for teachers, for coaches to come into my life to make me better in areas that I think are areas for growth.
As I listen to you describe some of these disciplines, JP, I just can't help but think to myself, like, I'm not good at most of these things, you know? And when I look at my calendar and I look at my nutrition and I look at my sleep schedule, I mean, I could go down the line and say, boy, you know, I'm way, way behind where you're at and where you've grown into, you know, today. So for coaches that are like me, you know, that are looking for first steps, and you mentioned before, this didn't all happen overnight, right? It was an incremental process for you over the last 7 or 8 years, but where is the best place to start? How do I start making small gains that eventually are going to lead to some momentum that can really see some significant change when it comes to my personal development?
All right, Nate, so I've got three things for everybody here to leave people on. The first thing is focus on what needs to be removed or cut back from your life. And for me, that was TV, binge watching TV shows. And I kind of went a little cold turkey for about 3 months with no TV and then, you know, slowly added it back into my life and now have a really healthy balance with that. But it also could be something around social media. You know, I don't have any social media apps on my phone now. It's blocked on my browser on my phone, you know, so it's just trying to cut out things in your life, whether it's social media, the news, Netflix, or whatever is in your life that probably is a little bit out of proportion, that's eating up your time. And every one of us, I know we all say, oh, we're so busy, we're so busy. But if we pull out our phones, we look at our screen time and we look at our app usage and our browsing history, there's probably a lot of time actually there that we could get back if we cut back on some of those things or remove them from our life. Now, when you cut back, all right, or you create a bit of space in your life, now think of something like a habit or a discipline that would you enjoy or would excite you. Maybe it's working out more. Maybe it's meal prep so you can improve, you know, your eating. Maybe it's more sleep. That would be a great one for most coaches out there. And so whatever that habit is or that discipline, start it. And one of the best times to try to implement those disciplines, if it's exercise or journaling or reading more, is to do it in the morning. Because if we can get it, the important things for us, you know, that self-care, that personal development in the morning, there's less chance that other things will come up throughout the day that will derail us from actually executing on that. So as you cut back or remove something that isn't really not providing a lot of value in your life, now in the space, find something that you enjoy or that excites you and slot that in that extra time that you have. Now, the last thing I guess I want to really share here, Nate, and this is maybe a little less practical than some of the other suggestions that I've shared today, but it's really one of my principles for life. And I remember hearing this years ago from a pastor named Father Mike Schmitz. And actually, as part of the TOC Community Bible Study, we often listen to his sermons each week and then discuss them. Well, Father Mike often reminds, you know, us to be patient with yourself, but ruthless with your environment. He says, be patient with yourself, ruthless with your environment. And I reflect on that often. For me, personal development is a long road and journey. Despite what people might tell you on Instagram, YouTube, or in some of the self-help books, it is not done in 30 days, 90 days, or even 365 days. It is not, you know, new you and, you know, that amount of time. And progress is not always evident. And you're going to take steps backwards, you know, along the journey. So you have to be patient with yourself and the process. But at the same time, we have to be ruthless with our environment. When people in my life, friends, family, you know, whatever, when they hear about some of the disciplines and habits that I've built into my life, how much I read, how much I run, how much I journal, all these things, they say, you know, gosh, you're very motivated. I would kind of disagree. I am not always motivated. I have just really designed my life and environment to minimize friction with good things and maximize friction with the bad things. When the alarm goes off at 4:50 a.m., I don't know of the last time that I was excited and motivated to get up and get going. I'm not motivated at that time of the day, but I am disciplined. And I have shaped my environment to help, you know, support those disciplines to grow within me. When my kids go down to sleep, you know, around 8 o'clock at night, I am not very motivated to grab a book and read. I'm tired. and there's oftentimes temptations to unwind, you know, and just scroll through my phone or watch a TV show. But I've shaped my environment to help remind me and to encourage me and to stay disciplined and reading something and spending time, you know, 1 or 2 minutes in my journal, just reflecting on my day. I dock my phone at a certain time every day. You know, it's in the room. It's far away. It's kind of locked up. We only have one TV in our house and it's definitely not in our bedroom, right? So I've shaped my environment to help support these disciplines and habits I want in my life. Here's the thing. I truly believe every one of us is motivated to make changes in our lives. None of us are where we want to be or who we want to be. It doesn't mean we're discontent. It just means we all have a desire for growth, a desire for more meaning and purpose, for more connection with others. We need to use that desire, that motivation, intentionally and intelligently to shape our life step by step, action by action, habit by habit. So take action. Take action today. Cut something out. Add something good to your life. If you want any advice on books to read or where to get started, you can just shoot me an email at jpnerbun, N-E-R-B-U-N, at thriveonchallenge.com. Thanks for listening today. Thanks for hanging around for this
quite lengthy discussion. Please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and share if you found this valuable.